Coming this Easter Sunday, sacred music for the Easter season. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the world. Coming Easter Sunday at LutheranPublicRadio.org.
The revelation ending the ban on the priesthood is called Official Declaration 2, and it appears in the Church's Doctrine and Covenants. And there was essentially no introductory notes prior to this week. Now there's a paragraph introducing the end of the ban that reads, "The Book of Mormon teaches that all are alike unto God, including black and white." Then it goes on to say that throughout the history of the Church, people of every race and ethnicity have been baptized and lived as faithful members. It mentions that during Joseph Smith's lifetime, a few black male members of the Church were ordained to the priesthood. But then it notes that early in its history, Church leaders stopped conferring the priesthood on black males of African descent, and Church records offer no clear insights into the origin of this practice.
That's Mormon scholar Terrell Givens talking about one of the recent changes made to one of Mormonism's sacred books, Doctrine and Covenants. Now, these kind of changes may be necessary given the fact that Mormonism has a teaching of ongoing revelation. So the Mormon Church's teachings may change with each successive prophet, and apparently somewhere between Joseph Smith and Brigham Young, they did with respect to African Americans. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Friday afternoon. It's the 22nd of March. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Bill McKeever will join us for the first half hour. We're going to talk about Mormon changes to their holy books announced recently. A little bit later on this Friday afternoon, we're going to review a Palm Sunday sermon preached by Pastor Bill Swirl of Holy Trinity Lutheran Church in Hacienda Heights, California. Of course, Palm Sunday is coming up this Sunday. We'll discuss Martin Luther on music and worship. It's a subject that Luther often opined about, often thought about. Pastor Charles St. Ange will be our guest, and we'll round everything off on this Friday afternoon, doing what we like to do on Friday afternoons at the very end of the program, and that's Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. That means we've got four soundbites to play for you, and you can listen to them in advance at our website, issuesetc.org. You can also vote in advance, or you can wait and give us a call, 1-877-623-6943. You decide which soundbite ought to be Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or vote at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Bill McKeever is a regular guest. He's founder of Mormonism Research Ministry based in Draper, Utah, and he's author of several books, including his latest, In Their Own Words, a collection of Mormon quotations. Bill, welcome back.
Hey, it's good to be with you. How are you?
I'm doing well. Is this the first time that the LDS Church has changed parts of their holy repertoire, so to speak?
No, they've made corrections to the most correct book on earth, and that's what Joseph Smith called it, many times throughout its history. Probably in 1837, there was a significant change where it described at one time that Mary was the mother of God. And then in 1837, they inserted the phrase "son of," Mary being the mother of the Son of God. In 1981, they made about 200 more alterations to the Book of Mormon. So they've made corrections along the way, which, of course, causes me to ask the question, are the corrections that the Mormon leadership has decided to make actually inspired like the book was supposed to be in 1830? Most Mormons, surprisingly, don't really care too much. They just go along with it because the church can do just about anything, and they're not allowed to really question it.
What does it take to actually make a change in either the Book of Mormon or Pearl of Great Price or Doctrine and Covenants?
My personal opinion, getting caught. I don't find the Mormon church making changes in any area, really, unless there's been some kind of public pressure brought upon them or some kind of embarrassment or some kind of factual error that needs to be corrected that even members are probably finding out and criticizing. So for me, that's usually what happens. They end up getting caught and they have to make some kind of change in order to save face. And that's the amazing thing about the leadership of the Mormon Church. They will never admit that there were errors made on the part of the leadership. And that's why I was amazed in this article that talks about this, that Terrell Givens talks about correcting wrongs. And I just can't imagine any Mormon leader making a confession like that. Givens can, but he holds no real authority in the Mormon Church. He can say pretty much whatever he wants. But I don't think you're going to hear anybody in General Conference get up and say, hey, the leadership made a bunch of mistakes, and we're going to correct these mistakes. So this is why we're changing our headings in the Book of Mormon and such and so on. That's just not going to happen.
Mainstream Mormonism, if we can talk about that, actually has four holy books, including what we would call the Bible, Old New Testament. What are the others? Can you give us a brief summary of each one of them?
Well, they have the Bible. Officially, they use the King James Version, even though Joseph Smith in 1833 said that he finished his inspired version of the Bible that is now known as the Joseph Smith translation. The Mormons don't use it as a bound text, although they do have Smith's alterations in their edition of the Book of Mormon, and they can find these alterations either as footnotes or endnotes. Now, there's no Greek or Hebrew manuscripts that have ever been discovered to justify Joseph Smith's alterations. But again, most Mormons don't care. He's the prophet of their God, and he can say pretty much whatever he wants, and few Mormons dare even try to question that. Now, they also have the Book of Mormon, which is supposed to be a record of ancient people that inhabited this Western Hemisphere. And the Book of Mormon tells the story primarily of the wars between two groups mentioned in the Book of Mormon, the Nephites and the Lamanites. Again, people are told that this is an ancient manuscript, an ancient scripture, if you will. But unlike the Bible that has historical veracity and archaeological support for many of the stories and place names that it talks about, the Book of Mormon is void of this. So you basically have to take it by faith in those areas. They have the Doctrine and Covenants, which is a collection of revelations. Most of them in the Doctrine and Covenants are revelations that were given to their founder, Joseph Smith. And it is more of a modern text, if you will, because a lot of the revelations that were supposedly given to Joseph Smith had to do with the LDS Church in these latter days, if you will. Then you have what's known as the Pearl of Great Price. That's a smaller text that's a part of Mormon scripture. It includes the Book of Abraham, the Book of Moses, Joseph Smith's history and such. And that becomes a little bit embarrassing, too, because the Book of Abraham, which is a part of the Pearl of Great Price, modern Egyptologists will say that Joseph Smith's alleged translation from this ancient, what's known as the Sensen text, or the Book of Breathings, is entirely inaccurate. So the Mormon Church is now coming out, and instead of saying that it's an actual translation from an ancient Egyptian text, as most Mormons have been told for years, now it's more to be put on a plane of just an inspired translation.
What does that mean?
That's a good question. I think what it means is we got caught again, and we've got to come up with some kind of phrase that still, you know, makes our prophet look good. We've got to protect the myth. That's really what it really boils down to. They have to protect the myth. They cannot ever hint that maybe Joseph Smith didn't get it right from God when it came to his revelations. For one, Joseph Smith said he never got it wrong when it came to the revelations. So they're in a real dilemma here when it comes to reality and the things that their leaders have said over the years. They have problems with this.
Now, the nature of these changes, how would you describe them? Because the NPR story that we heard some audio from says it's really changes to introductory material. Now, that wouldn't be a huge deal for Christians if, say, okay, we've produced another edition of, say, the English Standard Version, and there are introductions that are not part of the text themselves that we made a few. No one would even notice that. That's just another a printing. What's going on here?
Yeah. Well, the thing is a lot of Mormons, when they read these headings, they're not a part of the ancient text, you're right, or they're not a part of the alleged revelation that was supposedly given to Joseph Smith in many cases. But I'm looking at this article, and this is the one, where was this? This is All Things Considered, which is where Terrell Givens was giving an interview. And it says here that, for instance, Givens says Joseph Smith himself, this is dealing with the black issue, Joseph Smith himself ordained black members of the church to the priesthood, but after Smith's death, beginning in the late 1840s, Brigham Young apparently charted a new direction in terms and began what became known as the ban. Now, Todd, this is fascinating because Mormonism, very similar to Islam, has its own doctrine of abrogation. What that means is if a new leader comes in after the death of the previous leader and he charts a new course, that's the course that God wants to chart. So I don't know what Givens is trying to say here. He's merely telling me nothing new here, but he's trying to make it sound as if Brigham Young took it in the wrong direction. And I don't, again, I'm not going to expect to hear any leader make a statement like this. He says in the next paragraph about the Black Revelation that this was a policy that remained in place until 1978, and it's really the albatross around the neck of the church. He says, I think that this new introduction to the Revelation ending the priesthood ban is a major step forward in many ways because it acknowledges that the practice may have originated, it seems to me, this is how I'm reading it anyhow, as a matter of error or cultural and historical conditioning rather than as the will of God, he says. That is, for me, mind-blowing because Mormon leaders, up until 1978, defended this teaching as a doctrine from God, and they used the word doctrine.
All right, Bill McKeever is our guest. We're talking about Mormon making changes to their holy books. We'll be right back on this Friday afternoon, March the 22nd.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Does your church need a backup organist? The Virtual Organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Coming this Easter Sunday, sacred music for the Easter season. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Lutheran Public Radio. Sacred music for the world, coming Easter Sunday at LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Islam, worship, feminism, pietism, postmodernism. You can meet and hear Issues Etc. regular guests discussing these topics at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Registration is $100 per person. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14 and 15 in Collinsville, Illinois, issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Friday afternoon, March the 22nd. We're talking about Mormonism, at least mainstream Mormonism, making some changes to their holy books. Bill McKeever is our guest, founder of Mormonism Research Ministry in Draper, Utah. Bill, you said before the break that this is incredibly significant for even just this one scholar who was interviewed by National Public Radio to mention the word error, or in his words, cultural or historical conditioning rather than the will of God. Explain that a little bit.
Well, it's just that Mormons have been led to believe that their prophets, their seer, revelator, this is the title that they give to their leader, is supposed to speak on behalf of God. And it's just unconscionable to think that they could make an error in the doctrines that they teach. In fact, there's a phrase in Mormonism that started, I think, way back with Wilford Woodruff, who was the fourth president of the church, that God wouldn't even allow the living prophet of the church to lead the church astray. And if he was to do that, that God would, what was the phrase that was used, take him out of the way or something like that. Now, many Mormons that I talk to firmly believe this. They just will not entertain the thought that somehow their leadership could be wrong, that something coming over the pulpit, like in General Conference, could be an error. You have to remember that a lot of times Mormon leaders spoke about the ban on those of African heritage in very authoritative sources. Living prophets talked about this, referred to it as doctrine, put it in their books, put it in official statements, and to all of a sudden now act as if, well, this was just folklore, is just amazing to me, and I'm sure it's amazing to a lot of Latter-day Saints, especially the older ones who grew up with this up until 1978 when it was officially changed. It's just incredible to me, and most Mormons probably won't even raise many questions about it at all. They'll just go along with it because they're really not allowed to openly question what their church leadership does.
Now, there's also been a change in a similar introduction on the subject of polygamy. What's the nature of that change?
Well, that's another albatross, to use Givens' word. The issue of polygamy has always been a problem for the Mormon Church, even from the very beginning. It was a problem for Joseph Smith. In fact, that was one of the reasons why seven of these men that were in the Mormon Church who had left and no longer had loyalty to Joseph Smith started the Nauvoo Expositor, exposing Smith for being the false prophet that he felt he was, for secretly practicing polygamy while Smith was lying and saying that he wasn't doing it, even to his own wife. Now, and of course, everybody seems to know, if you've done any study on Mormonism, the Mormon will tell you, well, in 1890, that all changed with a document known as the Manifesto. Well, not really. The Manifesto was more of a press release. It really wasn't a revelation. I've never seen the revelation itself, if there was one. But the Manifesto seems to be the statement that Mormons like to point to, saying, look, that's a part of our past. We're not going to talk about this anymore. But what a lot of people don't realize is that the Manifesto, in my opinion, was merely just to get the federal government off the Mormon Church's back and to buy them a little time, because they were still practicing polygamy, but they kind of moved it to Mexico and Canada and places like that. They were still doing it secretly, which caused them to have to come up with a second Manifesto in 1904. And after 1904, the Mormon Church really got serious about the doctrine of polygamy. Now, in Section 132 of the Doctrine and Covenants, this is the section that many Mormons point to, because this is where the doctrine of celestial marriage, as it was understood at the time it was written, was equivalent to polygamy, plural marriage. The Mormon Church in recent years has changed that and made it sound like, no, celestial marriage is merely talking about marriage for time and eternity, and that's all Section 132 is really talking about. Well, if that's really true, then why do we have Emma Smith, Joseph Smith's wife, being rebuked, saying that she better get in line with the doctrine of celestial marriage, otherwise she would be destroyed? Are we to assume then that Emma, for some reason, didn't want to remain with her husband throughout time and eternity? That would certainly sound a little bit of embarrassing. But here's the issue, though, Tom. Polygamy is not dead in Mormonism. It's just not. And so when Givens says, or talks about that monogamy is God's standard for marriage unless he declares otherwise, he's already declared otherwise. According to the Book of Mormon in Jacob 2:30, the otherwise is found right there in that verse. For if I will, saith the Lord of hosts, raise up seed unto me, I will command my people. Otherwise they shall hearken unto these things. What are these things? To have only one wife. The only condition that the Book of Mormon allows, and this is supposed to be God speaking, the only condition that would allow God to change his mind is if he wants to raise up seed. And I don't know how Joseph Smith fits that qualification, since we have no real proof that he had any offspring from his plural wives. So what was he practicing it for? And why would you need to raise up seed? What historical event was so necessary to have more kids being born? Because remember, kids, for much of their lives, their younger lives, are actually a burden on society. They don't really become a real helpful aspect of society till they get a little bit older, because they need so much attention. Well, what really took place where they would have needed more people? Was it because they felt that they were going to be in a war with somebody? I don't know. There's no explanation for this. But again, Joseph Smith can do just about anything, and nobody questions him. But it also ignores one other important aspect. If monogamy is God's standard for marriage, then why do we have three Mormon apostles right now who are sealed to two women apiece? Three Mormon apostles. They call it here in Utah, they call it celestial polygamy. Mormons no longer practice living with more than one living wife, but it is perfectly acceptable in Mormonism that if you are sealed for time and eternity to a woman and she dies, that a man can be sealed to another woman as long as she's not sealed to someone else, and also have that be for time and eternity. So you have, for instance, Dallin Oaks, L. Tom Perry, and Russell M. Nelson, three Mormon apostles. All are widowers. All have been remarried and sealed for time and eternity to their second wives. They most assuredly believe that they are going to be living with both wives in the next life. So to give the impression that monogamy is God's standard, as if the Mormon Church no longer believes in any type of doctrine of polygamy, is incredibly misleading. And unfortunately, because most people don't know all these nuances, and there's a lot of shades of Mormonism and that you have to really look at to get a fuller picture, they're going to assume that that's just a part of Mormonism's past, when that is not the case.
Are there any other changes that we should be aware of? We've got just a few minutes here before we wrap it up.
You know, I don't know of any. I'm kind of curious myself to go online and start looking at, because I understand that the new, you know, headings in the new edition of the Book of Mormon and such is supposed to be online. I haven't looked at it yet. I'm just going by some of the notes and statements that I'm hearing other people make. But I wouldn't doubt if there is.
Well,
I'm sure there probably are.
All of this raises a question, and it's actually raised not by me first and foremost or you, but really by Terrell Givens, who's his historian, where he says, look, maybe what we're seeing here is a kind of a Mormonism's theology, such as it has been articulated in the past by its revelatory leaders, bowing to history, to facts. What does that say to you? Got about 2 minutes before the break.
Yeah, that's, again, another amazing statement, because he goes on to say that he believes the additions show signs of a more modern Mormon church. That's an amazing statement in and of itself, because the Mormon Church claims that it's supposed to be a restoration of the ancient Christian Church and how it believed back then. That's why they believe that you and me and everyone else that's a professing Christian outside of Mormonism belongs to a church that's in a state of apostasy. I'm at a loss myself on this. I'm really scratching my head, too.
If they continue to make corrections, if they continue to say, all right, history says this and they said that, but we got to go with history, pretty soon some of them have to begin, at least honestly, to admit that the historical claims of Mormonism, even the basic ones, are completely untrue, don't they? About
yep.
A minute to respond.
You're right, and there are a lot of Mormons that are coming to that conclusion. I mean, I tell a lot of people this is a great time to be in Utah, because there are a lot of Latter-day Saints that are raising some real serious questions. And we need Christians here to kind of catch them before they drift off into agnosticism or atheism. But there are a lot of Mormons that are asking a lot of very good questions. And it's incredible. And we just want to be here when they start doing that.
Bill McKeever is founder of Mormonism Research Ministry based in Draper, Utah. He's author of several books, including his latest, In Their Own Words, a collection of Mormon quotations. You'll find a link to Mormonism Research Ministry at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Bill, thank you very much.
Thanks, Todd. Good to be with you.
When we come back, we're going to do a little sermon review here on Issues Etc. on this Friday afternoon as we go into the weekend that holds the beginning of Holy Week. Palm Sunday, Sunday of the Passion, depending on what you want to call it, the very first day of Holy Week. We're going to review a Palm Sunday sermon preached by Pastor Bill Swirla of Holy Trinity Lutheran Church in Hacienda Heights, California. That'll round off hour one for us on this Friday. Then Pastor Charles St. Ange will join us. We're going to talk about Martin Luther on worship and on music. And then we're going to play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. We've got four sound bites laid out for you. You can listen in advance at our website, issuesetc.org, and you can vote in advance as well at our website, issuesetc.org. When we come back, some sermon review, Pastor Bill Swirla preaching on Palm Sunday.
In the 1500s, the Reformers grieved over the view people had of their callings in life, believing work done for the church superior to work done anywhere else. So the Reformers worked to restore a proper balance. But as it's written in Ecclesiastes, there's nothing new under the sun. 600 years later, with the thought of everyone a minister, haven't we gone back? The CLCC has released a new seminar on the doctrine of vocation, an important Lutheran teaching that has fallen into disuse over the years. The solution is to start teaching it once again. The seminar contains four lessons, with a standalone overview lesson available for circuit convocations. Serving our neighbors through our vocations is essential for the task of evangelism practiced according to Scripture. Contact us to schedule your seminar today at theclcc.org. That's theclcc.org. And please, consider joining the CLCC or making a donation to help us bring these powerful but low-cost seminars to the laity. theclcc.org.
Higher Things assists in cultivating, encouraging, and promoting a distinctively Lutheran identity among their youth and young adults. To fulfill this mission, this summer, Higher Things has three conferences. You can find out more about these conferences at fromabove2013.org. The winter issue of Higher Things magazine is now available. This is a topical issue on church and state that you can read in its entirety on our website, higherthings.org.
Whether vacationing in Branson or boating on Table Rock Lake, Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church in Kimberling City, Missouri is your Christ-confessing congregation. Every week, Christ comes to us through the preached word and sacraments, by which we are strengthened and kept in the one true faith. So come to where Christ comes to you. Come to Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church, 103 Kimberling Boulevard in Kimberling City, Missouri. For more, see our website at sothl.com.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Stephen Hine on the Consortium on Classical and Lutheran Education Conference, July 16th through the 18th in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
The Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education wishes to invite all Issues Etc. listeners to its 13th annual conference, hosted by Concordia Theological Seminary this July 16th through the 18th. For the first time, we will be featuring three-day intensive in-service opportunities in such areas as teaching Latin, classroom design and management, Christian and non-Christian worldviews, classical Lutheran pedagogy. Please join us for our best conference yet.
You can find out more about the Consortium on Classical and Lutheran Education Conference, July 16th through the 18th in Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ccle.org, ccle.org,